Yes, it is.
I need to go out to the mall and walk this time of the year. I mean, I don't do that enough.
There's a bunch of people.
8:45 on the clock. We'll go ahead and get started with the Board of Supervisors meeting. We will start by reciting the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Open Meetings Act is still over on the east wall. Attendance by observation, Jurgens, Hill, Bauman, Lytle, Byers, and Tiemann. Meyer and Dorn will be absent today. First up on the agenda is the consent agenda. Number one is the general agenda to be approved under the consent agenda. Number two, approved minutes of meeting held January 20th, 2016. Number three, approve all claims through February 3rd, 2016 in the amount of $409,526.41. Approve in place on file correspondence received. Approve March Against Child Abuse Walk April 2nd from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Approve reappointing Steve Whitwer to another term on the Gage County Planning and Zoning Commission. Approve specifications and call for bids on spring rock and gravel. Bids to be opened on March 2nd, 2016 at 9:15 a.m. Approve specifications and call for bids on 29 miles of armor coating. Bids to be opened on March 2nd, 2016 at 9:30 a.m. Approve specifications and call for bids on new 2016 tandem axle dump truck. Bids to be opened on March 2nd, 2016 at 9:45 a.m. Approve district court summary fee forecast report of the month of January 2016. Yeah, I was going to go back to that. And before we have a motion, I just... Going back to number five, that approve March Against Child Abuse Walk, I believe that is approving so that they can use our sidewalk. That doesn't mean we're approving or disapproving of them doing, of what they're supporting. So that's approving them to use our sidewalk. And that is all for the consent agenda. I would entertain a motion.
I would make some move.
Second.
Moved by Byers, seconded by Bauman. Any more conversation? Not seeing any. Go ahead and vote. 6-0 to approve. Move on to the regular agenda. At this time, we'll take comments from the public and requests for future agenda items. I see Leonard's here today. Leonard, do you have something you want
to... Oh, I've got a few things to bring up. I don't know if this is the proper time or wait till you get into the regular hearing.
Are you going to discuss something that's on the agenda where you'd want to comment at
no,
that
I
time?
I don't have nothing that's on the agenda.
Now would be the time then, Leonard.
You want it now?
Yep, now would be the time.
Lenhart Fritzen, 29813 South 120th Road. Roads are pretty nice. I come to present these yellow tickets to you. Couldn't get no money from the treasurer's office, so I thought I'd come to the supervisor, see if I could, that tax credit, you know, what we got, and we already had it all on the 370-some thousand wasted money. Did you guys comment to anybody up there in Lincoln?
I don't know what he's talking about.
I don't know that we have, but I'm quite sure a lot of people have commented.
Yeah. Well, I just kind of had to bring them along, you know. But I've got a deal here.
Hey, Lenhart, just a second. To kind of clarify what Lenhart's talking about, I hear a couple of you. The governor sent out postcards declaring that this property tax relief was coming, and it's something that's already been factored in.
Yeah, it's already been factored in on the tax receipts.
A lot of people were expecting to have more property relief coming, more more of a refund, and it was
I thought all these was refunds I could get.
Yeah.
Off of you guys.
And Lenhart's not the only one. I've heard that several times, and Don said that the governor, actually somebody called in and questioned the governor on that in the last show.
Yeah, I just had to bring them along.
Supervisor Keith might cash those for you. Maybe you'll cash those.
Supervisor.
Buyers, he said.
He's going to pick that up. Well, I've been at the assessor's office. I've been at the treasurer's office. They kind of shuffled that back and forth, like on the tax statements. And then the last I heard at the treasurer's office, that I says, how about the supervisors? Well, it sounds like it's got to be a legislature deal. But I'd like to have the tax statements so that they clarify on really what you got going. Now, here's the total value. Now, that should be the total value of your land, shouldn't it? Okay, I'll give you an example. Here's the total value, $718,370. Taxable value, $718,370. Both figures is alike. They should have the top figure, what actually your ground is valued at. And then there's no percentage. You don't know if they take 70% or 72 or 71, or it varies from year to year a little. And that should be on there, really. And so they told me the supervisor's supposed to look into it, into the state.
Is that something for the supervisors, or is that for the assessor?
Everybody will kick it down the road to the supervisors, and I'll give you a straight answer. What it needs to go through is probably NACO needs to support the association that the assessor's office is a part of, and then they can sponsor a senator to change that. But it's not about people pushing it down the road. It's about people coming together and saying, hey, I think there's some legitimacy there because it doesn't read real clear. But it starts, I would say, in the assessor's office, and we can help through equalization to go through NACO, which is a county association of all the elected officials. Somebody should probably approach somebody at the legislature and say, can we look at this and clear this up? But we can assist in that process, and I won't kick it down the road. Maybe we can work with Patty through equalization and then
work. See if something. I mean, what you get out of it. I mean, I don't know what you guys think, but it's no true statements what we get.
It can be confusing at times as to what's the true value, what's the percentage you're being assessed on. I would agree.
Yeah.
I haven't, Lenhart. Quite honestly, on that. I've had the comments on the yellow cards, but I haven't had any telephone calls or conversation relative to people who haven't been able to understand on their tax statement what it is that they owe. And this is the value, and they say if they have any question on values, they go to the assessor's office. If they have any question on whether they can understand it or not, they go over to the treasurer's office. But I'm just not getting any. I'm not getting any complaints on people not being able to understand. Maybe everybody else.
I get occasional. Now, how do I read? What is this again? And we just sit down and kind of.
Well, it's not really a complaint. It's something that
it comes
kind
up.
Of a joke. I call it.
It's really. Something we can discuss the next equalization meeting with Patty.
See if there's something. I'd like to see the percentage on it, what you're taxed at, and I'd like to see the total value. There's plenty of room there. All they got to do, they got to have the top figure before you can get the bottom figure, as far as I'm concerned. So I'd like that to go have that kind of looked at. Oh, let's see. Now, where's my slip at? I don't know if I... here. Have you guys got a... Oh, I'm always kind of curious, I guess. Have you got a total figure on what that road will cost to the fertilizer plant? Easements and everything?
Not the easements. I think the easements were going to cost... Myra would know off the top of his head, but I think the project itself was $4.5 million or right in there someplace.
And plus the...
project.
Plus the other work, what you got to do and... so forth. That's not a total
figure.
As far as
trees taken out, you mean? Or?
Yeah, and all that. That is.
That's the county's responsibility. We did that already.
That would be on top of the costs.
It would be in-house cost, yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I was wondering what the total cost, what what it does figure per mile on something like
that? We could get that number.
Yeah,
we just can get that pull the easements.
I know today there's another $12,000 worth of easements was paid out last or in this current cycle.
You wouldn't have the total cost.
I don't know. I don't have it wrote down. No.
We can wait till next meeting and have that.
Yeah, we'll have that.
Mm-hmm. I'll contact one of you guys. I'm just kind of curious on there. Now this wind deal. Seems like nobody wants it in Gage County or Lancaster there. Who would a guy get in contact? I got a whole mile I'd like to have windmills on. Them electric power deals on. They're taking out electric poles, and so everything be open. There a stretch of it east of Belters, there where I live. And who would a guy contact? I'd love to have a whole bunch of them there. There ain't many people living there, a few coyotes, few deer, and few people in Sherman Township there, you know. So there shouldn't be no opposition.
I think, unfortunately, if they decide to build a wind farm in that area, they will contact you and they will suit that area. I know that there's been an area studied like from Virginia down towards Burchard previously, 8 or 10 years ago. Oh. And supposedly that high-voltage power line, what I was told from somebody that should know, only has half the capacity that it requires, and then, until that's a new line, why that area might not fit.
Might not fit. We got plenty of wind there.
Yep.
East and west road. So there's no problem there, but I'd like to know who to contact and really talk to. You know,
I'll remind everybody, as the attorney reminded me, that during the comments for the public, it's not a question and answer. You offer up whatever you have, and we really shouldn't be discussing back as to or answering back as to what's going on. This is for items for future agendas. It's not.
That's for the future agenda. Yeah. So I got to make another meeting, huh?
Yeah. You go ahead and throw at us what you got there, Larry.
Okay. Oh, I ain't got too much. How about the savings on the electric that was put in underground? Have you guys got any figure on that? You know, the underground heating system when the courthouse was redone. I'm always kind of curious about that stuff. I mean, is there any comparison was made from the years before?
We can get that information for the next. We can work on getting that information maybe for the next meeting. It might be two meetings, but we'll see if we can't get something.
Yeah, it'd be kind of interesting, you know, if people out in the country, if it's feasible, that's something of the future, I think that's a good deal myself, Joe.
And that was the geothermal system that the courthouse put in several years back is what Leonard's
referring to. Okie doke. And I've got one other thing. I see we ain't got no problem, guys running for supervisor places. They must love that $30 an hour for part-time work. Not to hit on you guys, you filed already, and so I just had to throw that in. Pretty good wages, you know. So, okay, Gus, I ain't working on you today. You snowed in part of the time. So this here is my main concern.
Yep. So, and we will discuss that in 2 weeks. We will discuss that in our Board of Equalization at 8:30.
And I might just suggest, I know it came out, you might just stop down at the treasurer's office or down the assessor's office and ask them about how that's done.
I was there in both places. See, the treasurer's office, they type them out. We get the figures from the assessor's office. The assessor's office comes from the state.
Right.
So it's kind of handed on down. So really, okie doke, thanks.
What's the question is?
Any further comments from the public? Not seeing any, we will move forward with the committee reports. Building and grounds and winter lights.
Nothing unusual. Try to keep the snow off and keep some sand on so people won't fall down, we hope. But everything's going well, and Davey has been working with the sheriff relative to our issues over there and the fire marshal. So we just try to stay ahead, and we're doing that.
Equalization, finance and insurance.
Just point out about 25% of the claims this time were employee health insurance. About almost $89,000 of the $400,000 claim were employee benefits outside of wages. And then Gus has got boarding outside inmates of about $14,000. And then, again, as Terry pointed out, we do have some easements that come across again from the Hickory Road project. So.
Anything more for finance insurance? Human resources, employee relations?
Nothing.
Law enforcement, emergency management. It's a pretty thin morning as far as law enforcement. Did discuss integrating some software programs. I think we will probably think Gus is going to look into that some more and see if it's a possibility of getting that in place and maybe having it into next year's budget. Also want to, we got some deputies that are participating in the corporate wellness program, and it appears as though they've lost 36 pounds among the four of them, so they're doing a good job of it. So want to commend them for that. As far as emergency management, we had Carla Jones in here. The new director of the 911 center, or the Southeast Communication Center, and it was good to get to meet her and have a little discussion. I think that's something that is a work in progress for sure, and I think it's important that us as board members and you as a public, if you have any issues or questions, that we make sure that we communicate and discuss through those things so that we make that as good as it can be. So I don't know if anybody else had comments.
Nope.
Anything else for law enforcement or emergency management? Not seeing anything. Okay. Road and bridge.
Yes, Gary. I don't know if it happened or not, but the Barnston Bridge, that replanking, I think, was close to being done. I don't know if it got finished up. It got finished up. The sign program, of course, a few of these items we had discussion are up on the future agenda, or on the coming agenda here, so I won't get too far into them until we get to that part. Of course, we approved specs on new 16 tandem axle dump truck, approved specs and call for bids on 29 miles of armor coating. Approve specs for bids for rock and gravel.
Sorry to interrupt. I wasn't paying attention to the clock. It's 9:03 on the clock, and we got a 9 o'clock timed event here. So I think we probably better shut that down and go ahead and get started here. We got the Veterans Honor this month that we're going to have presented to Leonard Wertman, and I guess we'll have Phil come up and go ahead and introduce Leonard.
Good morning. This morning it's my pleasure and honor to introduce Leonard Wertman. Leonard was inducted into the United States Army on May 15, 1951, and he was discharged on February 14, 1953. He served in Korea. Some of the medals that are listed on his discharge paper are the Korean Service Medal, Combat Infantry Badge, Purple Heart, Republic of Korea War Service Medal, National Defense Service Medal, and the UN Service Medal. At this time, I'd like to introduce Leonard Wertman.
As Phil said, I'm Leonard Wertman. I want to thank Phil and you people for inviting me up here. He pretty well told the story on me. Yes, I was drafted, and for 21 months, 14 weeks of basic training, home for 10 days, reported to a train depot in Omaha, special troop trains to Stoneman, California, there a few days, and over to Japan, there for less than 24 hours, another ship over to Seoul, Korea, and assigned to the 2nd Infantry Division, Company G to start with. I was in there a short time. They just recently came off of Heartbreak Ridge, getting their strength built back up. The company commander told me, I forget just what the figures was, but they was full strength, and 24 hours later, they were down to way less than half, abreast killed, wounded, or captured. Well, I was there a couple of weeks with them. I had an opportunity to go to Regimental Headquarters Anti-Tank and Mine Platoon. I said, hey, I'll go there. I had the MOS for that. The people that had been there longer said, hey, you're making a mistake. That's worse than this. I said, it can't be much worse. I still think I made the right decision. I was there about 6 months. Got blown off a landmine, blown me off a rice paddy wall, and landed down the rice paddy. Fractured my shoulder, other leg injuries and other injuries, face and head and like that. But anyway, then I was in the hospital about 6 weeks in Japan and then back to the States. And that's about all I have to say. Thank you for inviting me. As far as the honor, there's other people that need this honor probably more than I do. So thanks a lot. And I was drafted. But the way it turned out for me, it was a privilege to serve this country in such a manner. So thank you.
Thank you, Leonard.
Tokens of our appreciation, and thank you very much for a job well done.
Well, thanks a lot.
Yes, sir.
Before we move on, I just want to say that I appreciate Leonard coming in and speaking to us. It's always nice and interesting to hear from you guys, to have you guys come up and speak to us, and it's good to hear the stories, and I assure you we all believe that you deserve that honor just as much as anybody else.
By the way, here a little over 2 years ago, I was on this honor flight to Washington, D.C. Hey, that was great. Of all the people that done all the work organizing it, financing it, and the treatment we had, it was just wonderful. As we were coming back that night on the plane, the man sat next to me, I said, hey, we've been gone now for 2 days, living high, not spending a dime. Now we got to go home and start spending money.
There you go. There you go.
And they are in the process of raising money again right now for another flight. So anybody that feels generous, there is a way that you can support that flight again.
Which is a very good program also.
Yes.
Everybody I've heard speaks a lot the same of Leonard of it. It's pretty amazing.
It was great. The banquet the evening before there at the motel in Omaha where our wives were there and everything, that was great. The governor spoke. What really stuck to me was a group of Korean women over here doing something, I don't know. But they expressed their thanks for our country helping them out, driving the communists out of South Korea. They're a free nation now, a prosperous nation. And that really struck you when they said that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. I've been letting people get back to your business, and thanks again.
Thanks,
Thank
Leonard.
You.
All right, Terry, if you remember where you were at before I really interrupted you.
Well, a lot of these items, like I say, are coming up on the future agenda here, but basically, we had discussions on fuel bids, and basically, this is interesting. The county down there, county as a whole, not just the road department, used approximately 28,000 gallons of unleaded gas and 63,000 gallons of diesel. Of course, today's a big day, 1 in 6 year plan. We have a distinguished guest here today. And with that, I think, unless there's something else that you see here, we'll stop there because a lot of these things are going to be coming up on the agenda.
Anybody else have additional for Road and Bridge? Not seeing any, we'll go ahead and move forward. As Terry said, there is several of these items going to be coming up, and we'll have plenty of discussion moving forward. Okay, so next on the list, we got a approve or disapprove LPA program agreement on high-risk rural road bridge and culvert object marking project.
I make a motion to approve.
Second.
Moved by Juergens, seconded by Bauman. We'll, Terry, do you want to give a brief?
Briefly, and Galen could probably do a better job, but what I have wrote down in my notes, this is a federal program that is completely funded by the federal government. It's for updating signs, bridges, culverts, and everything. Basically, Galen said we'd be looking at approximately 1,444 left hand, 1,040 right hand, and 2,088 post, 2,088 anchors, and 92 flex signs. The total cost would be $164,791.85. The county will have to install them. I think we have a date, completion date by December, to get these all done. It's just it's a good deal because it's a safety issue, and these signs will be up on bridge sites, culvert sites, things like that. So it's a fairly big project again, but like I say, this is totally funded by the federal government. We will have the expense of installation. So that's basically the gist, unless just you have anything else to add to that.
Any other comments or questions as far as this program goes? Not seeing any, go ahead and vote. 6-0 to approve. Next up, approve or disapprove resolution on signing of the HRRR Project Program Agreement, BL-1602, NDOR Project Number HRRR-STWD 128 and control number 00913.
This is resolution 16-01.
16-01.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Moved by Bauman, second by Juergens. Any additional comments? Or
Galen, you want to take that one?
This resolution is for signing the high-risk rural road program agreement. It's a transportation project for which federal funds will be used. Gage County, Nebraska Department of Roads will enter into a new program agreement for funding the bridge and culvert object marker signing project. This is the federal share, so it'll be 100%, and Gage County's cost will be 0%. That's what it is.
So it's just the resolution approving
resolution
the sign
the
program.
Yep.
Go ahead and vote. 6-0 to approve. Approve or disapprove resolution requesting the Board of Public Roads classifications and standards grant a relaxation of standards for addition of a 36-inch corrugated metal pipe.
Make a motion to approve.
Second.
Motion by Juergens, second by Bauman. Galen, do you want to explain this project a little bit?
Sure. 16-02.
This is a project to come about from the flooding that we had the last spring. It's actually on a township minimum maintenance road, and the township had turned in for FEMA funding for this particular site. The culvert was undermined, and they put in funds for this site, and FEMA requested a hydraulic study be done for the culvert installation. And for the H&H study, to put in another tube beside this 36-inch tube to get it over the two-year minimum, what I call overtopping, for what the water goes over top the road. And this was requested by FEMA to have this done. It had to be put on the county's one-year program, and the funds will go to the Highland Township for doing the work.
And that's what I was going to say. This is a culvert project. It's in Highland Township.
Yes. Yep.
Thank you, Galen. Any further conversation? Not seeing any vote. 6-0 to approve. And now what we've all been waiting for, the discussion on 2016 one- and six-year proposed highway improvement plan. Guess if, Terry, do you have anything you want to say leading into it, or you want to just go ahead and have Mark?
Let me introduce our distinguished guest.
I'll just briefly touch on the basically the bridge and culvert part of it. On the one-year plan, there's one federal aid bridge, Adams Northwest. 16 bridges will be replaced with culvert. One box culvert replaced with a bridge on East 5 Lincoln. Two slab bridges. Four culverts will replace existing culverts. And two small concrete box culverts will be replaced with culverts. On the six-year, five bridges were replaced with culverts. Two bridges replaced with bridges. Seven bridges will be replaced with culverts, and one bridge will be replaced with a box culvert. That's basically the bridge part of it, and as far as the other stuff, we'll get into that, the main meat of it probably, with Mark here.
Okay. Well, I guess we'll hand it over to our distinguished guest and let Mark Minnelli let her rip.
Can I talk about that distinguished thing just a little bit?
If we want something,
no, you can't.
If we want the drawing that's a little bit more, with a little more illustration, I do have a copy of Terry's map yet also.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You guys didn't get hammered as bad as we did. You're for once. Usually I watch the weather you get and figure we're going to get something a little less. So.
Good Lord shines on us down here.
Something. Keep going to church. Terry kind of summarized everything. What this map is the map that you got in your books. But I highlighted it, and I'll leave this with Galen. So it's a kind of a quick reference by category. The green items are previous culverts that we've worked on that we haven't done either because of right-of-way, of sizing, of budget constraints. The orange, what I'm going to call orange, are the new CMP sites that we've added to this year's one-year plan. The yellow are the black tops that we're waiting to final out, so those contracts are still open. The blue are the armor coat that you mentioned earlier, and then the purple are the painting of those roads and the armor coats and the hot mix roads. So there's a handful of jobs that aren't highlighted. A lot of those are six-year projects, which are grading and future paving, federal aid projects, some shouldering work, et cetera. So as far as the work complete, we had a pretty good aggressive year. In your packet, you see a summary map that shows what happened with those, whether they were completed, delayed, or dropped. There's quite a few more jobs that are pending completion, like the asphalt work. So as soon as that issue gets resolved, that would have shown as completed. Of course, Hickory Road's on there, and that's off and running now. Just to touch base on that a little bit, we've got the railroad crossing agreement is supposed to come the 15th of February, which we'll forward it to Galen and then Roger for his review. So we finally got that moving forward. Corps permit, we're working with Corps of Engineers on Corps permits. As soon as we get that, the contractor has requested early start on the box culvert and the bridges. We'll bring that to Road and Bridge to come up with details as far as what we're going to allow or not allow them to do. Trees have been removed and stockpiled off the job. So that project is up and running. Federal aid, I'm going to let you update me. What would the Board of Classifications do with our relaxation? turned you down, so we're redesigning the HL 93. Okay.
I'll just say turned us down with still no reason other than they had talked about ending that at some point in time, but had never set a date. And it had been there before, so they just re-voted it down. So Myron talked to Senator Baker, and he did get a good letter for us up to Governor Ricketts, and we'll see if he intervenes. That puts anybody involved when you try to push a board's decision, puts them in a peculiar spot. So we'll see. I would assume that's dead.
But because of procedural purposes, but practicality, it wouldn't have made any difference. That's the problem. So
we didn't just give up.
No, I know you didn't. I just didn't see it in their minutes. So I just must have missed it. So
we pushed it clear to the top. Now we'll see if we get anything back.
Well, I mean, the governor's been very vocal about trying to save money and be efficient, and this is a perfect example of, and all those people are appointed by him.
One of them actually made that comment that this would be following what the governor wants to try to save money, and they also made comment that in this situation with the traffic counts at 90 some cars a day, there was really no need to up this, but they still all voted against it.
Yeah. Well, LB 960, which will impact a lot, including the one at 6, that's why I'll bring it up at this point in our discussion, and those type of items, concern me because of the design standards that will be implicated, including the new design standards that will most likely be adopted in March of this year, which I told you guys about, and they proceeded with that. It impacts mostly our paving projects in the future. Hickory Road is designed to that standard, so we have to worry about, but future overlays will be impacted. We'll have to have shoulders as part of our project, which is in the past we didn't. So we'll talk about that when those standards get adopted. As we talk about standards and our one-year program, we being Gage County, kind of have unwritten standards as far as items like overtopping frequency. You heard Galen talk about needing a design that met the two-year overtopping. That's the state minimum. Talks about if it's less than that, it's a low water crossing. That's the only hydraulic criteria the state puts on counties. The width, the shoulder slopes, et cetera, are in there, but nothing about the hydraulics. So when FEMA comes in, FEMA looks at that low standard. So what I'm going to bring in to the board, Road and Bridge, is new standards for overtopping frequency for the county. For instance, a paved arterial route would be higher than it would be for a minimum maintenance road. So maybe we decide as a board that we're going to shoot for a 50-year overtopping for our paved arterial routes, or a 25-year minimum design standard. That then would be adopted. When FEMA comes to town, we take that and say, here, this is our minimum we can do. Now, we'll have to follow that for everything. Minimum bridge culvert lengths, bridge width, minimum bridge width for different classifications of roads. When do we use headwalls? When don't we use headwalls? We want to circumvent all those items so that next time we have a disaster, and from a county standpoint of it being standard everywhere, we'll adopt those standards, or I'll recommend we adopt some standards that we can then apply toward those designs where those new design standards fall short. So we're not just arbitrarily pulling something out. We can say this is our standard. If we can't meet those standards, we as the road department would come to you and get a design exception from you, letting us relax those county standards if for some reason we can't meet them economically. The 3R standards, that culvert that Galen's talking about on the minimum maintenance road, one of the advantages of the new standards is we won't have to do that, go to the board anymore for those type of deals, as long as we meet the next classification up. The reason you got to get a design exception for minimum maintenance road is the way it stands today, there are no standards. So you got to go to them and tell them how you're spending the money. What they're saying is because I sat on the committee, is we put a caveat that says if you design it like the lowest local road standard, then you don't have to come to us. You just hit that lowest standard. You don't have to come tell us what you're doing. Just put it in your 1-6. So that's one thing good that comes out of it. That saves 3 to 6 months in a process working on a minimum maintenance road. So that's something that'll come up. So in the future, you hopefully won't have to do those resolutions requesting design exceptions for these minimum maintenance type projects. Other than that, you've all had your projects. We're fiscally bound to these projects. It's in our budget. We're heading forward. We're doing good. Any input or changes that you want to do? I know there was some discussion about some cold in place recycling that I've been doing some research on. We haven't done a lot of that lately. So I went back and I've been doing some cost comparisons to see if we could get contractors even up here to do that. Most of them are out of Kansas. There's one or two down there right now. Getting them into the state sometimes is a challenge because there's just not a lot of that work in Nebraska. So if we want to talk about that, we can, or anything else.
Well, in regards to that, the once website showed a presence in Nebraska, but I didn't see any projects there. I didn't want to load too good, but
That process 10, 15 years ago was kind of hot and heavy. Yeah. None of the Nebraska companies wanted to get into it. As you get north, our weather changes so dramatically that what you do in Kansas and south of the Nebraska border, really south of if you just look at this storm, you can see where the weather changes, and that their aggregates, their activity, it changes quite a bit. So what we can get away with because our extreme temperature changes change quite a bit. But we have done a lot of those, and we've monitored them over the years. John, I'm willing to show you the projects and where we're at, and what we found is that. Sometimes just additional mill and fill long-term look as good or better, depending on how far the road has gone and deteriorated. Adams County was big into it for a while, so we do of a 8-mile job, we do 4 miles with mill and fill, and we do 4 miles as cold in place, and then we'd monitor it. And then we started doing the fly ash stabilization stuff, and we'd monitor that and see which one long-term is and would perform, and we're in the process of kind of reviewing those. So,
and I got a couple other things. One, unless I'm wrong on this, the blacktop that comes north of Barnston up to the Wymore Liberty Road, I do not show a armor coating on that since it was overlaid 14 years ago, and it seems like a long time to me that we're letting the best part of the road deteriorate.
Galen, you have that top of your head?
It's hadn't been overlaid, armor coated since it was overlaid. John is right.
Okay,
that was in 2002, right?
I believe that's what it was.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
Usually, you get to that 8 to 10 year period. In a perfect world, we're armor coated.
Right.
So, armor coat does a couple of things. Number one, it seals that top, prevents that weathering from that top part of the road, prevents moisture from working in, and it gives us a new friction surface,
right.
So that as things get polished and slick, basically, it gives us a new riding surface. So the state does a lot of chip seal. Chip seal is a lot more expensive. You get no structural advantage out of an armor coat. It's a maintenance item, and some counties just do fog seal, where they just shoot the oil, let it dry, and then they're done. So you get the sealing, but you don't get the driving surface. So
what's your thoughts on fog sealing? I know Eric has talked about that at times.
You know, in the right place. The problem is it's got to be done at the right time, because if you get any moisture, even the wrong humidity, it's like a skating rink.
How long does that last? I mean, that's what I had read some on fog sealing. I know you have that terrible slick. That's what I worried about too. Does that go away then, and the oil actually absorbs some?
That's the idea. That you've got emulsions and cutbacks. One has water in the oil. One has a distillant like a diesel type fuel to get the oil to put it down, and then it has to evaporate out. So once it evaporates out, it soaks in and it's done. There are some new products that are out there that I'm not real sold on. That they go around and they tell you they get really good penetration and it rejuvenates the pavement. Well, if I'm rejuvenating 2 inches down by spraying something on top, we got some major issues.
Right.
We shouldn't be getting that kind of penetration. So,
just as an example, 136 west by the college, they fog sealed that about 3 years ago, and then they just armor coated that this last year. So the state was anticipating maybe a couple years out of the fog seal.
Right.
And that's all that is just putting oil back into
Shoot
it.
Shoot the oil. Just seal it up. Just seal it up. And it's fast, and it's quick, and it's cheaper than the armor coat. And sometimes they'll do that to push it out until they can get the armor coat budgeted and get it through the process.
Mark, while we're on armor coating, what's your thoughts on aggregate that's being used? I know the states use what they call a dried shale on a few roads around
that's
here.
That's the chip seal.
And most time we're using, or most people use gravel. What's the advantage difference, grand advantage, and do you know what the cost difference would be?
I don't have the cost in front of you, but the chips are, they're basically chip, that waste chips that a lot of the pits used to have that you could go get for free, and now they figured out there's a use for them. So it's more expensive. Mm-hmm. The friction coefficient is a lot higher on shale or limestone, chip limestone, than it is for gravel, particularly when it becomes polished. Not that gravel's a problem. Almost all counties use gravel because it's readily available. The producers have it. It's easy to lay down. It works.
The advantage I heard, that stuff, you don't have near the, when we put gravel down, come back with a broom, brush it off, it's gone. This stuff basically all stays.
Right.
There.
Now, if we got a guy that's bringing gravel, and that's one of the things we got to watch. There's a balance between how much oil and how much gravel you put on. If we're taking too much gravel off, we're putting too much on. So we need to monitor. We don't just dump it. I mean, it's the guy who applies it won't get. It's better for him to put more down because then he brooms it off and he doesn't get bleeding. So sometimes if you don't have enough gravel, you get that black stuff coming, the oil coming through. That's called bleeding. That means we didn't have enough gravel. If we have too much gravel, you're wasting it off on the shoulders. So there's this test spot we should do on every mile because each mile is going to absorb a different amount of oil, and we should be adjusting in that first application how much is soaking, drying, and you put your gravel down for embedment, and you have to adjust it. So in the spec that we have, there's a variation between how much oil, gallon per square, from a low end to a high end. Same thing with the gravel. That should fluctuate. So if the guy's getting paid for oil and gravel, he's going to want to go like hell. He's not going to adjust. He's going to go and lay it down. So you got to stand there and say, listen, we're bleeding. We need more gravel. We're wasting too much gravel. And that's a matter of going out there with a stick and a shovel. So some of that is we're allowing them to haul too much material.
The other advantage of this limestone or material, they said a gravel course, you got a rounded surface. Well, this stuff's got more of a squared surface,
right,
and it would adhere better and stay on the road better. That's just some comments I heard. I don't know if that's correct or not.
The thing about chip stone is it's very porous. So it absorbs the oil more, so that's where you get the more sticking. But, you know, armor coat sticks fine. We've used it for a million years. But the cost of hauling the chips, the armor coat guys called me when Galen had asked me something about it, and I asked him to go directly to Galen and give him an idea, and I don't know if he gave you any idea of what the difference was.
He never gave me a dollar figure, but he did say that most counties use the gravel because it's a lot cheaper.
Yeah, so, I mean, we get more miles out of it to get the seal and the surfacing.
Just a comment I'll make. The city, just this last meeting, they approved their armor coating for what they had for the year, and I had made a phone call, and that armor coating cost to them, now city be a little different county, but it was about $14,500 a mile.
Okay.
So that figured out. So
right, and in town I would suspect it to be a little bit higher,
yes,
because out in the country they can blow and go. So those are still good numbers. So some of these, John, as we get bids, like we did last time we did armor coat, we looked at our budget and added critical miles. We could still do that.
I guess I got one other question on the armor coating. One is on the pavement that goes down from Virginia to the Liberty Road. It's going to be at 7 years. We've got it down to paint stripe it, but if the paint is gone, are we not starting to see the you know, the UV damage to the asphalt and
you know, unless we spend, right now our paint, and I'm just guessing, it's probably 10 cents a foot, 12 cents a foot.
It's $960 a mile.
All right, you got a minimum of three lines. So if we come back with the thermoplastic paint that the state sometimes uses in the grooved areas, that's as much as $2.50 a foot. So if you pencil it out, if you paint all the time, that better long-lasting paint, you just don't have to paint as often. But that paint wears off on concrete. Okay. It just doesn't work. And then when you're dragging blades on it in the winter and trucks, it's a tough deal. You know? So
this is probably not one that's going to need the better paint because it's going to be due for an armor coating in a couple of years.
So. Normally, unless it's a very, very, like an industrial road where we're not going to be able to go paint it all the time, on county work, I think we've ground. Cities will do it. We'll do it in town because they just don't want to paint. But for county only work, I'm just trying to remember. I think there's maybe one industrial road we did up by Norfolk that we ground half, and then half of it was in another county, and they used the other paint, and they're painting every other year.
You aren't so concerned about the paint sticking, though. You're more worried about is the pavement damaged, and are we going through the motions? If I'm understanding right, going through the motions where we're going to armor coat in the next short go and then cover up what we just painted?
That is my concern, you know. Are we going to armor coat it in a year or two?
Usually you're going to get 2 years out of paint, and then it's disintegrating.
Because I don't think we want to grind any. I mean, it's not worth the expense, I don't think, to us on any of our roads.
No. Not on older roads, you know. I would. Pavement, maybe. But even then, you know, I mean, the Hospital Mile Road, that's just sprayed paint. And that's, I don't know, have we repainted that since it's been done?
No.
So, I mean, if we got a wide enough lane and people aren't driving on it, a lot of our asphalt stuff, people are driving on the paint line just because of 11-foot lanes.
And if we're looking at 10 years before we come with armor coat, that'd be 3 years. Yep. So this probably go ahead with the paint on that, I would think.
Yeah, and remember, it's a safety item. I mean, if you don't have paint there, we got to paint it.
Right.
Yeah.
And here's the one I'd really like to discuss. When you did your paving assessment, the one in January of 15, the South 36 Road down by the quarry to Holmesville to Blue Springs, the north 5 miles, you'd recommended a 3-inch overlay, the south 5 miles, a 2-inch overlay. And we've got it down to armor coated. I drove it Monday night at dusk, and it was a little bit more dusk than what it should have been, and I was marking down at the same time. But if I counted these anywhere close, there was 17 patches that we did this last year, and I also counted 37 alligator patches in that road. And some of those are right up against the patches that were done this year. And it looks like a lot of this has occurred since the fall and our fall rains, the slow, heavy rains that just must have got down underneath it.
Yeah, we got hammered.
It has really changed. I mean, what are we looking at if we armor coat this and in 2 years this road is really a wreck and then want to overlay it?
The road goes through a life cycle. So if it's to the point to where we're getting those let me step back. So we have the transverse cracks that go across, the thump, thump, thump.
Yep.
Those are thermal cracks.
Right.
That's from freeze-thaw.
Yep.
Making them go. We fix those by grinding them, patching them full depth, wide. You have fatigue cracks. Those are the ones down the wheel line that just kind of run down. That's just from the wheel lines going like this. That's the fatigue crack. Then you have where the alligator cracks start coming in. That's typically because we don't have enough structural thickness or we're getting deflection down in the sub-base. So either from the base below it, the asphalt below it is deflecting and the top layer is more rigid. That'll happen where I got a lot of cold mix down below and I put hot mix on top and it becomes it becomes brittle and weathered, and it can't handle it. So sometimes you go down 2 inches, and what's below it's still fine. Sometimes it's an indication of bearing issues, which is what you're suspecting. Right. So if that's the case, and when we come back and you look at it before, like if you guys said, listen, we got to do something, it's time, we'd reassess how much of that there is and decide, do we patch this? Is the rest of it fine?
And well, then, and then over the rest is not fine.
Okay, but or we come back and say it's beyond that. Now we grind up what's there full depth, and we either haul it off, start over, or we treat it either with a fly ash, full depth fly ash stabilization, and then use that as a base and come in with either concrete or asphalt overlay. And if that's the case, then anything that you add is not wasted. Armor coat, overlays or whatever, because that aggregate and that oil then rejuvenates the whole thickness, gets me a good base. Now, if I've got 10 inches of material out there and I come in and put 4 more inches, when I start to see that, I think we're never going to recover. I got to take 14 inches of stuff out of there to fix the problem. Then we're going to say we got to do something other than that. We got to mine this out of here and start over, and then that's a reconstruction deal. The difference between a maintenance overlay and reconstruction is going to be 4 to 5 times the cost, particularly because of the new design standards. You're going to, any of our roads are going to have 6-footer shoulders on them if we rebuild them. So that's some of the consideration, but you got to look at the overall thickness and can we get down the road. So when we did the original assessments, it was what's it take with the anticipated traffic to get down to 20 years where half the people are pissed at 20 years, I think.
Right. And part of this asphalt is 30-plus years
right.
since the overlay. Some of it is more recent than that, but I don't think hardly any of it is within 25 years
sure.
as far as the actual overlay.
Right.
As far as the longitudinal lines, there's not many places you're not driving where there isn't one on
right.
one side of the road or, you know, three or four of them going that way.
And when he says patches, if I understand it right, a lot of our patches are, Galen's trying to get this thing to last, so we've taken those deflection problems where we do have deflection between layers, and it turned into a jigsaw puzzle. He's skimmed over the top of it with a thin layer just to try to seal it, so I would
now
call
that's
it,
not yeah, and that's
I would
not
call
a patch.
It seal patches.
Yeah. So what we need to do is where you have those, we need to take that skid steer and that ripper, and we need to be doing patching, which means you go down until you find sound material, and if that's not sound base, we fix the base. Then we patch it. And if we're not doing that, we need to do that for those areas.
But do we have budget or, I mean, you're doing that because of budget and time, I assume. Do we have budget and time to actually go in and tear all the, because you're talking
if you go
difference.
In on that particular road, the places that we've been skimming over has been the places where we start seeing alligator cracking, but it's not sunken, it's not rutted, it's not loose. So we go over it with approximately an inch of asphalt, seal that in. The areas that is dipped, you know, dipping, or it's loose and ready to start popping out and stuff, we go in with the milling head, we mill that out full depth, and we actually put patches in there. If we would go out on that road, say in the last 3 years, and every little place that showed some alligator cracking starting, and dug all that up or milled it all up and patched over, there would be no place to start and stop. I mean, that's just something we've been doing, not just only in that road, but other roads that we've overlaid in the last few years. That's the same procedure we've been trying to do on all the roads because, well, frankly, the county can't afford to go in and on every road and overlay them
sure.
at the same
right.
time.
So he's pinching the life out on them. But,
right.
I mean, just
yeah.
when you're talking to patch, I know that's a different patching than what you're talking about,
right.
just so you don't think that those
no,
patches
I, yeah,
are...
No, I know they're skin patching. So what we should do as a group is decide long-term what we want to do with that road. I mean, what is the where do we want to be
yeah.
in a perfect world? And how, if we feel that material is fatigued to the point to where we've got to do something major, how long can we push that out by doing this type of deal and keep it a safe road? Knowing that this is the piper we're going to have to pay eventually. So if you get to the point to where we can no longer push it out economically, then that's when we grind up and we start over.
And I would agree with taking a look at that. And this road is one of the roads that's in the top third of the roads in the county as far as county roads, as far as traffic counts.
Sure.
And the north 3 miles probably carries as many tons a day as what the Hickory Road is going to carry when it's finished.
So what I would recommend is that we come up with a long-term pavement strategy for that road and then say, well, it's still tolerable, although we know eventually. And then the investments we make are investments that can be incorporated in our final solution, which would be if we only, and I don't remember what we have for depth on there, John. Is it 6-8 inches on there right now?
A lot of it's got more than that, I think.
Okay. So we come in and you mill 3-4 inches, take the millings off of it, and then we grind up the last 5 inches with some base and lay it down. That's our new base. And if that's our game, then everything we do from here to there to push that bay out, as long as we can economically and safely, then that's our strategy for that road, knowing that we're going to do that eventually. So we got to get it to last as long as we can until it becomes cost. It's like an old car. I mean, eventually you say, okay,
right,
we can't do this anymore. We got to get something. And that's where we're going to be. Now, the key is try not to get to that point by doing the maintenance overlays and the armor coats early enough that, you know, if we got 30 years of pavement life, 25 years of never doing nothing, we would have really had something. But it's the loads on there, too, that are killing that. It's not just the longevity.
Right, right.
You know, that should have probably been a concrete road, and then we wouldn't have this discussion. You'd be asking me how often we ought to be crack sealing it.
And the north part probably should be concrete.
Probably, with the trucks.
Right.
And a total rebuild, that's, as we saw with our pavement east of town, it's almost a push when you do full depth.
Right, right.
Are you doing any white topping anywhere in the state? I mean, that if it functions and it lasts, that's a good application for white topping.
Right. White topping is, I wish they wouldn't call it white topping. What it is it's concrete pavement on top of a base, which is asphalt. My biggest issue with white topping is, unless we're someplace like northeast Nebraska, you got A&R construction up there, and there's no asphalt guys. And they come in and they jump on those roads and they go, but all they have is seasonal heavy loads and cars, and they're ranchers and cattle pods. I mean, they don't have the loads like you guys have. But where I'm concerned is if I've got 8-10 inches of questionable subbase and asphalt, and then I come back in there with 6-7 inches of asphalt white top overlay, 25 years from now, the board, whoever's here, is going, oh, we got to take this concrete off. Then we got to deal with this problem. These people left us, and it becomes a huge deal. So I would, Madison County, we had this discussion. They had a road, big grain facility came in. We took their asphalt, ground it down, took care of the problem. Then we did the white top, which was, it turned out to be thicker than what they tell you you can do because of the heavy loads. So I think it's a strategy. I just wish they wouldn't call it white top because it gives them the impression it's just a thin lift overlay, and it's really not. But it's still what below has to support what's above. And then I don't want to leave a gift for 20 years from now because we'll have to tear it all apart to fix the problem. That's the problem. So we got to look at that, too.
I didn't know if you'd seen any.
Oh, yeah. There's some out there that have been there for 40 years.
I mean, the biggest cost savings I saw, and I understand what you say, not calling it white topping, but you save, I mean, that's always that big expense with concrete is your base prep, yeah. Where if you have something that's in all right shape yet, if you could put a thick enough layer on there where it'll bridge the bad spots, they won't go away, but if you can get it to bridge, then I didn't know if that's a... With drainage, it doesn't work at all, but out there where drainage isn't an issue...
Right.
I was going to ask you, too, on overlays or armor coats, when are we going to have to start shouldering?
Armor coats are still maintenance.
Overlays are?
Yes. Overlays are going to be, if it's 2 inches or less, we can just go do it. If it's more than 2 inches, we're going to have to, based on the traffic and the classification of the road, put shoulders on with the project.
So that blows this one way up. I mean, this Holmesville Road, off of the highway, that could make a huge difference there. Cause
it makes a difference. It depends if you got shoulders.
There's not much for shouldering along there, is there?
No.
And if we get into the base, in other words, we take the pavement up and start over like Hickory Road, then the shoulders really get wide. So that's... But the overlay, we used to just match what's there. And now you're going to have anywhere from 2 to 4 foot earth shoulders, which in some places can be a big deal. So it'd have to be done with the project or before the project.
I guess we have clay right there at least.
Yep, that's right.
And that's the long-term strategy. So if we know we're going to have to do something like that, then we should be shouldering it now so that if we screw it up, we use our guys, we do it or contract it out, and then we can fix whatever they screw up. I hate shouldering after the fact. It drives me nuts.
And I think this is one that I think you're right. It does need to be looked at, or we will be leaving a gift for a future board to deal with and maybe this board, because I don't think it's going to be very long.
Yeah. So you, I, and Galen probably need to spend some time on that road. I mean, if Road and Bridge wants, I mean, whatever you want, John, call me and I'll come down. And then we'll go back to Road and Bridge and try to develop a plan.
One thing I think everybody should remember is that the structures that are underneath that road, all them culverts, that needs to be addressed before you start doing all this top work.
Well, and that's, right. Yeah, I mean, and shoulders and culverts would be perfect to do now because we could patch over those, get rid of the settlement, you know, do it in stages where it makes sense.
Right.
Never stops.
So the Colton Place Recycle, anybody that wants more information on that, I can show you roads and projects.
Now, you're saying cold in place, but aren't they calling it hot?
Well, there's two processors. Cold in place recycle, which is the same train, and then they got a hot in place recycle where they heat it up, and then that gets really expensive. Basically, you got a hot mix machine right behind you in the train.
Right.
Usually in Nebraska, they use the cold in place process.
And the cold in place anywhere close to the hot in place as far as quality?
We've used it. The issue is when you get into really heavy loads, You basically have something between a cold mix road, which can't handle heavy roads, and a hot mix. There's something in between. So we usually come back with a structural overlay on top of that. So if you got a road where the base is great, we've got asphalt that's map cracking in that upper 2 to 4 inches, then we grind that up, lay it down, and we've got a new refurbished top, and then we top it with the rest of the structural strength that we need. That's normally what we would do there.
On the 136 going out of town, they did that cold in place where it was basically, they basically reclaimed all the base and
right.
Incorporated fly ash,
yeah.
Compacted it, and then they laid hot mix on top of it, and that was our road then, I think, if I remember.
Yeah, right. And there's different strategies. One is as you get all the way to the base. One is as you do 2 to 4 inches based on what you've got there. And then you either add fly ash to it, or you can add slurried lime. So it's either lime or fly ash. So fly ash becomes really tight. Usually we'll use slurried lime when we have a lot of rutting in the existing stuff. Fly ash is readily available and it's cheaper. And then we get a really good base. The problem is then it cracks and then it reflects through the asphalt long term too.
I guess I got one last question. The asphalt that's on the top is the most recent and probably was the best process, and some of that's on the bottom may have even been cold mix or whatever
probably.
At the time. Can that stuff come apart enough, like the cold mix that's the first layer, second layer, that you really don't have a base underneath it, you just got
at least? What happens, John, is as moisture gets in there and infiltrates, it literally washes the oil off, and it looks like dirty gravel. So when you go underneath there, it looks like black, dirty gravel. And if,
yep.
and from there, you look at the little newer stuff, it's black, shiny gravel. That's the crystallized oil that we rejuvenate by adding oil when we grind it up. I mean, you re-liquefy it. But it's real stiff oil at that point, which is an advantage to asphalt. And so as you look at the cores as we pull them out, you can see what you're talking about. But there's places when you get down there, and it just looks like black gravel. And it's just the oil's gone.
And once you get to that black gravel, it's no longer considered a good base.
Well, if it's confined, it's gravel, and it makes an okay base. The issue is if we've allowed water to infiltrate that base.
Okay.
Now, if we're out where we have sandy soil, we don't care because the oil wicks away. I got a drainable base around where you guys got clay. It has nowhere to go but to pump into the subbase, and then you get soft subbase. And that's where you get your blowouts. And then it's cancer at that point. It's hard to stop. So, John, anytime you want, just get with me and we'll put something together. We talked about the new standards that will impact all that. Any other questions on the 1 and 6? what's on the agenda about, have you guys talked about 960 or 958 yet? I'm sure Don's probably seen the 958 because it's going to kill you in your budget. There's a bill out there, 958, that will not allow you to take lit exemptions for infrastructure improvements, which would just absolutely kill us because...
It removes unrestricted funds?
Yeah. You better look at that.
Capital improvement?
Yeah. And they're talking about if it passes, what you have today will be your baseline. So counties that don't have that, or if you want to do something in the future, you're going to have to... It's a problem. It's an effort to and it taxes the schools too. It really goes after schools. It's a property tax relief bill, but it will really impact how we budget our capital improvements. So you need to look at it. It's in the debates right now.
It still has a levy lid limit.
It does, but you can't take.
But
those.
If you're underneath, say, 5 cents of your lid limit, and you want to do capital improvement, which would qualify for that, which would be unrestricted.
You need to look at it because it's, as people are reading it, we're having discussions and people are having heartburn about it, and it's a quick session, so we're afraid it'll slip through. But yeah. I don't know where Nagel.
Whose bill is that?
I can't tell you.
Where is it? Is it still in committee? Is it moved out or
not? No, it's in committee, but it was offered up as courtesy to the governor, so somebody carried the banner. Somebody in their last terms, probably.
958, you said?
I think it's 958, yeah.
So this is probably the governor's bill that he has somebody carrying for him.
Yeah, and okay. I don't know who it was. And then 960 is the design bid build, or the build to use the Build Nebraska money to pay off that's $150 million that the governor's offered, or Smith has offered. Basically, they want to borrow it out of the general fund. $125 million would have to go back to the general fund with the Build Nebraska Act, which is probably when you were there, which was to build the expressways. But it would allow the roads department to design, build the projects to get them accelerated. But design build is a 30 to 40% more cost. You just get them 2 years earlier. I don't know why we'd want to borrow money from ourselves to pay it back to do something fast. Hopefully the legislature sees through that. The advantage in 960 is they peeled $25 million off and they're trying to develop a program to give that money to the county as a 50-50 cost share. And I've sat on a committee to talk about how that money would be distributed. Basically it'd be your federal aid buyback formula, and then we'd have to match it. Which is ironic because we wouldn't be able to match it if this other bill went through. But then at that point, over 2 to 3 years, did you look it up, Don?
Yeah, I hadn't looked at my legislative email here. It's introduced by Senator Mike Glore, Revenue Committee Chair for that 958 is for Governor Ricketts. He's carrying it for him. Yeah.
But, so,
well, it's one of those situations. Glore doesn't have any choice. The governor gives it to him as the revenue committee chair. He'll introduce it, but doesn't mean he'll support it.
Right. So the 960 is the big one where it's that expressway deal. There's $25 million for county bridges. That'd be an advantage. So what do we get federally buyback for bridges?
250.
So we'd get $750,000 over a couple of years, which we'd have to match for bridges on the system that they would want us to do. It's voluntary, so that part could be good. And they're talking about. I told them that counties won't participate if it's run through the roads, but if they can take those funds and do their own thing. And they kind of agree with that because, like this sign deal you signed, that started 3 years ago just to get safety signs out. So that's the last thing we want. And I think they agree. The Innovative Task Force meets Thursday, a week from this Thursday, and I think the roads is going to present their idea for our county bridges, $25 million. The problem is that's the little enchilada. The big enchilada, the grill, is borrowing money from the general fund, to which the Build Nebraska Act would have to pay it back, to accelerate something, design, build, to save 2 years and then pay 30 to 40% more, which is from their own testimony, the cost of those projects. So watch 960. I know NACO has supported that one because of the extra infrastructure cost of the counties. So that's the advantage to us. The highway system are the ones, but So you might want to. And that's risen from the ashes of that 609, 610 stuff last year. So it's, but it allows design build in the state, which is not necessarily good for our team. So anyway, that's what I had. And any other questions on our project?
Who would be doing the design build? That would go through Department of Roads?
Department of Roads would, the bill is 22 pages long, and I have read it about five times. And I've written my testimony, and my testimony is we'll have to pass it to see what's in it. Because it all says the roads will write the rules. Any question you have, it says the roads will write the rules. So I don't know. I don't know. When you ask questions, they don't know. We just want to allow design build so we can accelerate four-lane expressway construction. The Norfolk 275 project as well.
It says on here, Governor's property tax bill hearing set for February 4th.
Fourth.
Tomorrow.
And that's in the committee. That's a committee hearing?
Well,
yeah, it's not on. Yeah,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, hearing, yeah. If it's a hearing, it's
heard by the Revenue Committee on February 4th.
Yeah. So you might just want to take a peek at that and see. But I read it, and I thought, this can't be good. Unless they change some other rules for us. But
if that's not specific to county, that would be any levying body.
They talk about, yeah, it impacts the schools. It talks about, school boards, how they do their bonds, how they hold funds for long-term capital improvements. It just allows a lot of that. I would suspect that the League of Municipalities, the school associations are probably freaking out, too. So
I would imagine you're going to have a whole room full of people opposing that piece of legislation.
But
they're going to be there, right?
That one? Yeah, I mean, that's my intent.
Okay.
But usually when I walk in on those, Larry Dix on those type of deals usually does. I agree with him, so I'll just say I agree with, or I'll
get it. As far as if NACO's against it, if schools are against it, if I can't imagine I shouldn't say that.
Well, especially if you're going to pick one particular year to be your basis, what if you had built for 3 years, you decided to squat and save some money and not do any major projects, go into a maintenance phase. They picked that particular year as your basis, and now, well, why don't you go back 3 years when we were building stuff and actually...
The formula is
flawed.
So it's something to read and see if I'm interpreting it the right way. So I'm by no means an attorney or legislator, but I've been reminded this year that you're let us legislate and you just engineer. So... And I said, well, you're legislating for me, buddy.
Well, and unfortunately, none of these bills address the issue of all the state aid dollars to education that have disappeared. And now they have to come back or they have to stay with property tax. And
well, what choice do you have?
Right.
You don't have any. I mean, give us some
Doug
tools.
Just mentioned the Badger City Council voiced opposition to this bill.
Did they?
Yes.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, they took a formal stance. I think they're going to actually testify against it.
Yeah, so it's just so you know what's out there. And there's a couple other things out there, but those are the two that got my drop. Anyway.
Forwarded the NACO email that has the legislative.
Good. Couldn't hear you.
I forwarded my email that I got from NACO to you guys. So.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, Mark, get to work.
Thank you, Mr. Mark.
Thank you.
Any further conversation on the 1 6-year plan? Not seeing anything more on that. All we have left is a closed session for the discussion of real estate. So I don't believe there'd be any decisions coming out of that. It'll just be a discussion. Can we get a motion to go into closed session for the necessary for the protection of the public interest or for the protection of needless injury to the reputation of an individual?
So moved.
Second.
Moved by Hill, seconded by Byers.
Just go to
vote. We'll be going into closed session at 10:04. Are we ready?
Yep. Yeah.
10:49 on the clock. I would entertain a motion to come out of closed session.
So moved.
Second.
Moved by Thiemann, second by Hill. Vote 6-0 would come out. 10:50 on the clock. We will adjourn.
Be curious.
Thank you.